Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. Yes, and I am deeply, deeply grateful that you chose to be with me on this beautiful April 21st, 2018 day. We call this Satsang, a radio program, a heart-to-heart kind of communion. Hopefully, I'll be able to answer some questions that have been given to me here. They're really wonderful. And it's about the promise. Really? Yeah, the promise. What does that mean? It has to do with the whole idea of learning what it means to live in the life that is love. What is the promise of the practice? Everything we do because there is a promise to it. And we'll talk about that. I want to remind you that this radio program is supported solely and entirely upon your tax-deductible gifts. It is only through your kind support, your donations, your, well, becoming a sponsor is the deal. It is only through that method that we are able to continue and to offer you TV programs, et cetera, all the things that Aspire does to serve you. And I'm hoping that you will find the radio program, our TV programs, worthy of your support, that they are helping you in some way. I can't imagine, truthfully speaking, how they couldn't unless you were just really not interested in anything that would be of an inward nature or that you're already captivated by something else, whatever. But this is an authentic thing that I offer, and I hope that you will find it interesting enough to support with your gifts, because that's the only way we pay the bills is, believe it or not, off of your gifts, your tax-deductible gifts. So if you go to the website at aspire.org, and you see in the middle of the page there, support, and have the courage, the heart, the love to click on that. Well, drop-down menu will come, and it will say, why support Aspire? And I hope that you will read that, and you can sign up right there. Everything has to have a payoff in our lives. That's just the way it is with Americans. I don't know about anybody else. I live here in America. I've lived in India, but That's an entirely different value system there. So it isn't quite the same there, that I must say. But I don't know what it is now because I haven't been back there in hundreds of years, it seems like. So in America, you give something, you get something back. There has to be some bang for your buck. And I often get an email here and there, and I've collected them here for you in the last 6 months. From people who have read a commentary here or there, or have listened to me here on the radio, or have searched my website and seen some of the TV programs I've done, and they realize that there's a lot being asked of you to enter into an authentic practice. So here we go. The first one comes from Carol, as she does not tell me where she lives. Greg, what is it that the practice, as you put it, gives us if we were to really get into it? You ask a lot of your students, it seems to me. What is the payoff, Carol? Carol, I have gotten this question since day one. Used to get them at retreats, and I would always be able somehow to manage to answer this question. And then when the people that asked it heard the answer, they quickly left. Quickly. Because they didn't like the answer. And it is not something I think that most people truly understand nor care to understand. Everything has to have a payoff. And do I ask a lot of my students? Well, I give them a lot. I truly do. I offer them many, many things besides the TV programs, the monthly discourses, the journal that I write each and every month that we publish, the radio programs here, the message of the month. Oh my gosh. The whole kit and caboodle is about giving them support and insight into what this is really all about, what inner work, authentic inner work is all about, and not this remote inner work that people like to do through books and CDs and things like that. People don't want to be told what to do. They don't even want to be guided. They like guided meditations because then they can fantasize. They like that because it intrigues their mind and it engages their thinking processes. But the problem with that is it doesn't engage the heart. It only engages the emotions and the mind and the fantasy of it all. And in authentic spiritual work, there is no fantasy. So I am one of the few out there. There are others, but I am one. We are few out there who are authentic teachers that want to offer to you the exact methods and disciplines of a spiritual awakening and what it's all about. And if you understand that, if you can perceive that, if you can appreciate that, then you will see that what I am offering you is not the promise of something good will happen to you, but the promise that if you are diligent, you will awaken. You will see things for the way they are and as they are. You will not be fooled by your fears and your trials and tribulations, your assumptions and presumptions. You will not be betrayed by them. The promise of the practice is self-realization, as it is called. I don't like the word self, but the realization that inner awakening is the most beautiful thing that a person can experience. It certainly has been for me, and it wipes out everything that I've ever been through in the course of my lifetime. Everything. So if you are willing to lay down your ego and lay down your pride and lay down vanity and lay down ignorance and lay down belief and the concepts of the argument between your DNA and your genetic nature, if you're willing to lay those things down for a while and sit in the tones that I give you in my meditations right now, we're working on Tummo meditations. As you start to practice these, you will sense a different life arising in you, a different texture, a different tone will be awakened in you, something you had never imagined was possible before. And as this tone and texture begins to rise in you, you will start to feel the ebb and the flow of what the meaning of your life could be. There is something between the breaths, Carol. Listen to me. Try to understand this. There is something between your inhale and exhale that exists as the purest part of every single one of us. We have not been put on this earth like people would like you to believe we have been, and then abandoned and said, good luck, figure it out, and maybe you'll go to heaven when you die. It is not like that at all. Not even remotely. You and I have been given that gap, that pause, that space between our breaths where it all exists, where love, where depth, where kindness, where beauty exists. We have been given this in the form of many different ways of understanding, just as simply sitting by the ocean and breathing, sitting in the forest and breathing, sitting in your office and breathing. The promise of the practice is in the hands of the person who is practicing that. If you're not practicing, if you're not aware, if you don't think in terms of spirituality, if your only thing is to survive and live in the mechanism of your DNA and your genetics, then none of this is going to mean a single thing to you. And the practice won't mean anything. You need to live it out according to what I call your biology. And most people in this world live by pure biology. That's it. Their brain, their chemistry in their body, their organs. They want families, and they want to build on families because biologically that means they're not alone, and there's all sorts of implications there of doing what we're supposed to be doing, which really isn't true. We just like to think these things. How this all goes on inside of us churns away at the meaning of our life. So here's what I say to you, Carol. It isn't what the practice promises that, you know, I offer to you. It's what you will promise to the practice that will reveal the meaning of the practice itself. And as far as me asking a lot, it just depends on how much you want it. It isn't what I ask and how much I ask. I ask and I give to you exactly what the proportions of the practice are to the proportions of your mind, your body. And if you think that's a lot, you think that's a lot, and that's fine. If you see it in terms of what it really is and how it works and the method it works in and the system that really we all live in that we ignore that is absolutely beautiful, and that looks like too much to you, then that looks like too much to you. And you shouldn't be in the practice, and you can't be anyway. But when the time comes, believe it or not, in some lifetime or another, Carol, you're going to want what I am teaching. You're going to seek the meaning of what I am teaching. It may not be in this lifetime. It may be in future lifetimes. I don't know. But we all have to face this one way or another. I had to do it and still do, and you will too, because you will soon see that the way we live is in the depths of futility and not the camaraderie and the beauty of life itself. So that's what I offer. Carol, thank you for your beautiful question. I wish you well. I really do. And please forgive me. Namaste. Next one comes from Jesse. Can awakening really happen to anyone, really? I don't think so. Are you awakened, Jesse? Jesse, I don't think I'm awakened. I've had awakening moments, many of them. Do I think of myself as enlightened? I don't think of myself as enlightened at all. I have had enlightening moments, many of them that occur. And I think that is very, very important for people to understand. Enlightenment is a state of being that lives in all of us. And it isn't for everyone. You ask, can awakening really happen to anyone? Yes, it can. Listen to me, Jesse. I have been working as a teacher like this for 44 years. In my first 10, I had no idea really what I was teaching was something that would help people. I just tried to help people. I used to teach classes in Jonathan Livingston Seagull, and I would have workshops in the beginning years of my life, the first five of my career, teaching things that I hoped would help people. Actually, what I was teaching was something within me to teach me, and I learned that awakening. Then as I went on to really trying to conceal a little bit of what I had learned in India because I knew the American public wouldn't like it, I went a little further and a little further, and all of a sudden, big insights started to happen, huge. Things that changed the momentum of not only my teaching, but my life in general. And all sorts of things started to move into another direction, into other ways that I can't explain here on radio. And I couldn't explain to anyone else either because they were so different. They were so provocative. They were so beautiful. But nonetheless, and less than none, as it were here, I learned how to awaken. And I've had these awakening moments a lot. Now, whether or not you think they're awakened doesn't really matter. How would I know if they're awakened? And I'll tell you how. Because in the process of them, And in the awakening moments, they don't belong to Greg. They are nothing Greg came up with. There's something of the other shore, otherworldly. Greg at times does not agree with them. Greg at times hears them, sees them, watches them. And he goes, oh, my God, I can hear the difference between the awakening and Greg's response to it. And I don't really get too shook up over it. But be that as it may, that is what it is. The awakening is very, very important. It is about coming to a place inside where you live an extraordinary life. And there is an extraordinary life within us all. So when you ask me, can awakening happen to anyone? Absolutely yes. If it happened to me, it can happen to anyone. There is a price to pay. And for most people, that price is too high. So they won't do it because they haven't had their own experience, their own direct experience of it. Until a person has had a direct experience deep inside, where you live and nobody else knows where you live, not even maybe yourself. This is how it happened for me. Until that moment happens, all you're hearing is blah, 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 blah with words. You're not really hearing anything but words and ideas. And then we formulate beliefs and attitudes. And I'm asking you to sacrifice those beliefs and attitudes. That's what I'm asking. But most people can't do it because these beliefs and attitudes and assumptions, these rumors that we enjoy partaking in that we call our beliefs, well, they occupy a certain part of our mind. And that occupation delivers to us entertainment. I know that sounds crazy, but it is. We need to be constantly entertained. Entertained by whatever, whether we're watching TV, going to the movies, doing a sporting event, or we're just sitting quietly, we have to be constantly entertained. And in that entertainment, in that constant engagement, we miss the meaning of our own life and the substance of our living. So you say, can you ask me if anybody can really do this? Yes, I've seen people do it. I have students who have done it. I have students who are genuinely, what do I want to say, as average as anyone else. They have the pedestrian mentality like anyone else. And they'll be sitting there for months or years practicing the meditations that I offer. And I'll never forget the first time this happened. I will never forget it. It was from the most unlikely person to ever get it. This person was born back in the Midwest. She lives for Scrapple. You know what Scrapple is? Oh, it's terrible. I won't even get into it. She is very pedestrian in her thinking. Believe that her only purpose in life was to have grandchildren and children and that kind of thing. And she was going to be content to live her life out like that. And then one day, after years of working on herself through some meditations and only haphazardly, it hit. She had a moment where everything dropped and all that was there was the moment. That one precious moment. She got it. She had what we call a Satori. And she had it right in front of the group. The whole group was sitting there. We were at a Sylmar at the time doing a retreat. And the whole room felt it. Everyone felt it. It almost knocked me over. She is the most unlikely person to ever get it, but she got it. She's not the only one. What'd she do with it? She pissed it away like most people do. What'd the group do? Were they inspired by it? They saw it as a phenomenon of nature, and it wore off quick, because the ego immediately jumps in to defend itself and say, hey, you don't need to do that. That didn't really happen. And you need more entertainment. Let's talk about this. Let's think about that. And before you know it, you're lost. And the whole thing was lost. But it happened. And to this day, she will sit in session with me and talk about that moment and wonder how the heck it happened. Does she want it to come back? Not particularly. Why? Because it interrupts her entertainment, her order of living, the way she thinks. It interrupts all that, and God forbid that ever be interrupted. So there you are. That's what that's all about. Jesse, it does happen. It happened to me, and I'm a common folk, and it can happen to anyone. Believe me, it can. Maybe even to you. Please forgive me. Namaste. Never forget that moment. I've had very few moments in my teaching career where I could actually say, this was so rewarding. And that really was one of them. Okay, the last one, this comes from Carl. Does not tell me where he lives. What is this no thing that you keep talking about, that you say is so valuable? How can nothing be valuable? Sounds very sinister and strange to me, Carl. I don't know what sounds sinister to you, Carl. I don't get that. But it's not meant to be sinister, and it isn't really. No thing is simply that. A mind that becomes a no thing is a mind that is not interested in anything, any object, thought, or belief. It is a mind that is non-dualistic. It does not split things in half and make dualism out of thinking. I think this, and then I think the opposite is that. It's simply what it is. A state of being, a state of oneness, which is what we are really all about. You can achieve no thing, but it's frightening because the mind gets very scared when it isn't thinking and producing thoughts, what I like to call Greg's horse manure, when it's only thinking thoughts that it's comfortable with or can believe in or thinks is right or better than or whatever, then he's comfortable. And you have to look at your prejudices here. It all kind of stems from the prejudice of how I believe and what I think and what I think is important. That becomes actually a prejudice. And we harm ourselves and other people by living in such a manner. It's all about the state of love. Love is a no thing. It isn't a thing you can think about. It isn't a concept you can think about. Love is not an emotionality that you can feel in your body. It is beyond the body. But once it is recognized, all of a sudden, a blooming occurs. This blooming inside, this sense of beauty, this sense of being akin to something that is greater than our thoughts can usually generate. Well, they can't generate. Creativity, compassion, forgiveness all come into this. And suddenly, in that moment of awakening, we truly see the bigger picture of our life and what we're doing here. And we no longer fuss and fume about the small things about ourselves and other people and our life in general, and can recognize it is in the unconscionable kindness of the heart that we recognize the meaning of our own existence. And that is the most important element of life. And for a lot of people who seek to attain it and have attained it through their seeking, it is the most beautiful moment of life. And I can attain to that, and I can agree with that. It is the most beautiful moment in a person's life. It truly is. I hope that helped you. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste. We're out of here right on time. I'll be back on the air tomorrow with some more questions I think you're going to find very interesting. Have a beautiful day. Thank you for listening. Really, thank you. Thank you, my sponsors. And please forgive me. Namaste.